This is a difficult psalm to break up because it's an acrostic psalm. It doesn't have all the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, but most, and it works through the Hebrew alphabet. And as it does so, it kind of meanders, if you will. So different topics, different sections, many of them the same. But I think the best way that we can kind of lock it in our heads is the first section is tied together by the fret nots. Verse 1, fret not. Verse 7, fret not. Verse 8, fret not. And it explains why down through verse 11. At verse 12, we're introduced to the wicked who are acting. The wicked plot against the righteous. That's going to work down through verse 20. In verse 21, we're going to see the wicked acting again. The wicked borrow and don't pay back. I'm going to work through that section down through verse 31. In verse 32, we're going to see the wicked acting again. The wicked watches for the righteous and seeks to put him to death. So those are kind of the four different arenas, if you will. But let's go ahead and read through this. Psalm 37, this is a psalm now of David. Fret not yourself because of evildoers. Be not envious of wrongdoers. For they will soon fade like the grass and wither like the green herb. Instead of fretting, verse 3, trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will act. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light, and your justice as the noonday. Be still before the Lord, and wait patiently for him. Fret not yourself over the one who prospers in his way, over the man who carries out evil schemes, evil devices. Refrain from anger, and forsake wrath. Fret not yourself. It tends only to evil. For the evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord shall inherit the land. The land is the promised land of blessing, if you will. In just a little while, the wicked will be no more. Though you look carefully at his place, he will not be there, but the meek shall inherit the land and delight themselves in abundant peace. The wicked plots against the righteous and gnashes his teeth at him, but the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he sees his day is coming. The wicked draw the sword and bend their bows to bring down the poor and needy, to slay those whose way is upright. Their sword shall enter their own heart, and their bows shall be broken. Better is a little that the righteous has than the abundance of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. The Lord knows the day of the blameless, and their heritage will remain forever. They are not put to shame in evil times. In the days of famine, they have abundance, but the wicked will perish. The enemies of the Lord are like the glory of the pastures. They vanish. Like smoke, they vanish away. The wicked borrows but does not pay back. But the righteous is generous and gives. For those blessed by the Lord shall inherit the land, but those cursed by him shall be cut off. The steps of a man are established by the Lord when he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be cast headlong, for the Lord upholds his hand. I've been young, and now I'm old. Yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging bread. He is ever lending generously, and his children become a blessing. So turn away from evil and do good. So shall you dwell forever. For the Lord loves justice. He will not forsake his saints. They are preserved forever. But the children of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall inherit the land and dwell upon it forever. The mouth of the righteous utters wisdom, and his tongue speaks justice. The law of his God is in his heart, and his steps do not slip. The wicked watches for the righteous, seeks to put him to death. The Lord will not abandon him to his power or let him be condemned when he is brought into judgment. Wait for the Lord and keep his way. He will exalt you to inherit the land. You will look on when the wicked are cut off. I have seen a wicked, ruthless man spreading himself like a green laurel tree, a native tree. But he passed away, and behold, he was no more. Then, though I sought him, he could not be found. So mark the blameless and behold the upright, for there is a future for the man of peace. But transgressors shall be altogether destroyed. The future of the wicked shall be cut off. The salvation of the righteous is from the Lord, and he is their stronghold in the time of trouble. The Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. As we begin our summer, we're going to begin a series on the culture of chaos that we find ourselves in today. These are going to be more topical sermons, and by God's grace, we'll root them in a text so that they will be exegetical in nature, but they'll still be topical because we're going to be looking at different themes within the culture that we find ourselves in today. And it's a mess, and you know it's a mess, and everybody around us knows it's a mess. So as we consider how things have changed, we see that we used to have restrooms with boys and girls. Today, we have restrooms with boys and girls, and for those who can't make up their mind and don't even know what they are, we're told that there's some 57 genders and growing. We don't even know what they are. We have back from the beginning of Genesis 1, Genesis 2, we have the family to be fruitful and multiply. One man, one woman, for life, and from their union comes children. And God blesses a home. Today we're told that love is love, and it doesn't matter how which genders meet together, and we can, by order of the court, bring in children, and a home is a home, a family is a family, and love is love. It's messed up. Marriage is no longer between one man and one woman. It used to be that when children didn't make the grade, parents were upset with the children, right? Today, parents are upset with the teacher. How come my kid isn't passing this class? And the teacher dare not say, because he's not trying hard enough, he's not disciplined enough. It's because of the teacher. So the parents turn on them. It used to be that we had a history that we celebrated. There were men who stood out among men, who had virtues, and were celebrated and trusted for their virtues. They were elevated to certain positions. Today, we're impelled to review the history and all of the warts of our history. Not that they weren't there in the past, but that becomes the focal point of all that we are. We're defined by our faults and our failures rather than by God's grace and the presence of those who've disciplined their lives to better others. It used to be that race was one of those things that really didn't matter, especially here in America, that you could be brought together to serve under the flag, that you could reach across the aisle, that you could shake hands, that you could be on the same team even though you didn't see things from the exact same perspective. But not anymore. Not anymore. To be the underdog is to have a call to revolution so that you can gain the power. And if you are an underdog, you're a victim of the powers that be. It used to be that we used to teach our children that the policeman is your friend, right? Anymore, we want to defund the police because they're the bad guys. They're the real bad guys. That's what we're taught. We were taught that socialism was a system where the government held a gun to your head and said, give us your money so that we can spread out the wealth. Now we're told that capitalism is actually the bad guy, and we need to revert to socialism so that we can have equity within our economy. Everything is on its head. It used to be that the United States of America was the land of the free, the home of the brave. It was a safe zone for free speech. Today we have a cancel culture that you can't say anything that goes against the mainstream, and if you do, the media will call you out and make sure that you are canceled and that your voice is not heard. Things are upside down. This is the culture in which we live. It's not a culture in chaos, it's a culture of chaos. And it's demonic. And that's not too strong a word to put it. These are doctrines of demons, is what the Bible says. As we work through this, these are things that we need to be talking about as citizens of the United States of America, because it isn't just in America where these things are happening. This is Western culture. This is Judeo-Christian culture being turned upside down for the sake of casting off their bonds and throwing away their cords from us. Psalm chapter 2. This is man's effort to un-God God, to dethrone him over this world. That's why we have to look at these things. And that's why we're in the trouble that we're in. So we come to Psalm 37. And we see that there's two different pictures that are given for us. You see it there before you. Verse 1, fret not yourself because of evildoers. Be not envious of wrongdoers. Why not? Because, verse 2, they will soon fade like the grass and wither like the green herb. In verses 1 through 11, we're given the tension in a nutshell. We have the wicked. We have the evildoers. We have the wrongdoers. Jump down to the end of verse 7. It's the man who carries out evil devices. In verse 10, he's called simply the wicked. Down in verse 20, they're called the enemies of the Lord. Verse 35, he's called the ruthless man. And in verse 38, he's the transgressor. So we have all of these different titles for this one way of living, a life that's lived in antipathy to God, one that's worked against God, against his word, against his ways. But we see in verse 2 that like the grass, he will soon fade, he will soon wither. That's the destination, that's the goal, that's where this is going for all who are transgressors, all who are wicked, all who are bent on doing evil and doing wrong and casting off the yoke of God's authority in life. In contradistinction to the wicked, we have verse 9, those who wait for the Lord. Again, different titles. It's called down in verse 12, the righteous. But in verse 11, he's called the meek. And the word meek there, Jesus picks this up. Verse 11 is actually brought over into the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5. The meek shall inherit the earth. But the word meek in verse 11 is the same word that used in verse 14, which is translated poor. He's the one who doesn't have much in this world. He's the one who's struggling to get by. He's the one who's despised in the eyes of the world. So he's the one who waits for the Lord. He's the meek. He's the righteous. Verse 14, they are those whose way is upright. Verse 18, they're called the blameless. Verse 22, those who are blessed by the Lord. Verse 28, his saints. Verse 37, the upright. The end of verse 37, he's the man of peace. All of these distinctions, we have the righteous, we have the wicked, we have the blessed, we have the cursed. We have the upright, we have the unrighteous. We have those who are called to do good, we those have those who do evil. Okay, the distinction's very clear. This is the tension in which we live this side of eternity. One day, praise God, sin will not be allowed into the presence of God, and we will dwell with him forever. Okay, sin is banished, it's gone, it's not even a part of the game anymore. Praise God. But now it is. And as we work through these first 11 verses, I think we'll have the thrust of the whole passage right here in this nutshell, because this is it reduces this whole problem to expressing it in verse 1, don't fret yourself. And that word fret has the idea of being anxious. Don't get tied up in knots. When Bill Holshiser was here, he'd teach a Sunday school lesson, and he'd take a weight, and he'd drape it over the edge of the podium, and then he'd have a little piece of sandpaper. He'd have a weight on a string, and then he'd just set that weight going back and forth and back and forth the whole time as he's speaking. He'd slow down, and he'd pick it up and drop it again. And that idea of fretting is the idea of that rope rubbing back and forth over the sandpaper until eventually, boom, it would crack and snap, it'd drop, right? But that's what happens to us in spirit, isn't it? As we fret because of evildoers, there's really two responses the psalmist says that he has in this fretting, in this anxiety. The word means to be heated up on the inside. It's kind of like the teapot. Before it hits that whistle, you hear it going, that's what happens inside our hearts. And one of two things happens when we get heated up by looking at the unrighteous. He says there in verse 1 at the end that we get envious. I want what they have. And that was where Psalm 73 is. I looked at them and said, God, they're getting ahead, and I'm disciplining myself, and it seems like I'm not getting ahead. I want what they have. They're experiencing your blessing this side of eternity. They're experiencing the good life. In fact, they're even wearing their evil like necklaces and like garments, and they're getting away with it. I wish that I didn't have to discipline myself and beat myself down and protect my heart so that and protect my eyes so that I wasn't lusting and luring and looking. And I wish I didn't have to be so careful in life. I was envious of them because I was getting heated up. The other thing is, down just a little bit farther, not only did we become envious, but in verse 8, we become angry and filled with wrath. This isn't right. The idea of wrath is the idea of anger spilt over. I'm going to take things into my own hands. I will become the vigilante justice dispenser in life. And if God's not going to do anything about it, then I'm going to exercise my rights to take care of the problem. Right? And we've all been there. Anybody been envious of the wicked? Anybody been filled with wrath toward the wicked and wanted to take things in your own hand? Of course. Of course. And so we find in this first section, there's three times he says, don't fret. But look how he says it each time. Verse 1. Fret not. What's that next word? Yourself. Look down in verse 7. Be still before the Lord. Fret not yourself. Verse 8. Fret not yourself. So the idea is, if you are fretting, whose fault is it? It's your own. Yeah, but get that out of your vocabulary. No yeah buts. If you are fretting, whose fault is it? It's your own. What does he say to do? Fret not. So if we fret when we're told not to fret by God, what is that called? Sin. Okay, you're tracking with me so far? Okay. It's sin, and whose fault is it? Mine. So don't do it. That's the idea. Well, how? Thank you very much. Don't sin. That's a great piece of advice. How do I replace this, right? Well, thank you for asking. Let's keep going here. Verse 3, trust in the Lord. This is a perspectival switch. This is a 180. This is repentance, if you will. It's turning from one way and looking a totally different direction. I've been fretting about man because I've been looking at man. Well, how can I not be upset with man? By looking at God. Okay? It's not that man has changed. He didn't all of a sudden become sweet. He's not rosy at this point. He's still a thorn. Okay? But stop looking at him. Stop sticking it under your fingernail. All right? Turn and look at God. Trust in the Lord. He says in verse 4, delight yourself in the Lord. Again, the command is delight. And the next word is yourself. Who's responsible to make this happen? You are. You learn to find your delight in God. I don't know, that's kind of tough. I find God kind of boring. I find God kind of irrelevant. Maybe you wouldn't say that out loud, but have you ever felt that? You find God kind of boring or irrelevant? But when we don't delight in God, whose fault is that? It's not God's. God is the most complex, and by that I don't necessarily mean complicated. He's simply who he is, and he's all that he is. But he's the most variegated. He's got like a diamond. He's got all these different facets that you can put God under a microscope, and you can look at him from any angle and every angle, and you can step back and see him bigger and draw up close and look at him under the microscope, and you can never stop being amazed at God because he is eternally good. His ways are eternally perfect. His righteousness reaches to the heaven. His faithfulness extends to the clouds. This God is good, period. And if you don't delight in God, it's not God's fault for not being good. It's your fault for not tasting and seeing him for who he is. And so he says, trust in the Lord. Delight in the Lord. Verse 5, commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him. Because he's not a God like the idols of the nations. He doesn't sit on a shelf. You don't rub his belly. He's not like that little rabbit's foot you used to carry back in your pocket in the 1980s. Okay, it's not some of those things that you rub and it makes you feel good, but it doesn't really do anything. Just trust him. He's the living God, for crying out loud. He will do. He will act. He will function. He will channel all of who he is into all of what he does. He's a doing God because he's a living God. And as man exercises his God-imaging capabilities and does so in a God-defying manner, God is watching what they're doing, and God will do something about it because he's God. Because he's God. He will. Here's where we have the contrast, right? Don't fret because of evildoers, because, like the grass, they're going to fade. Well, what will God do? What's in it for me? What will God do for me? Thank you for asking. Verse 6. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light, and he will bring forth your justice as the noonday. As the light of God begins to shine on the darkness of man, man in darkness must shrivel up and die and pass away. But those who are walking with God and now are exposed by the light of God, he says, God will bring out your righteousness. He'll bring forth your justice. He will validate the fact that you have placed your trust and committed your ways to this God. He will make you to shine brighter, even as those who have shone bright become more dim. He will give you more life, even as he consumes theirs. He will do this for you. Another imperative given to us in verse 7. Don't fret. Be still. This isn't like that old song, don't worry, be happy, right? Okay, this is don't fret, don't get worked up, don't get boiling on your insides. Chill. It's kind of like that Hebrew word, chill, dude. Quiet. Sit by the shore of God's awesomeness and drink in God for a minute. Are all these things true that we looked at in those first few slides? Absolutely. That's what's happening. But we have one of two choices. We're going to get all worked up about it. We're going to get all bent out of shape because they're changing this America in which we live. Yep. But this world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue, right? Okay. God's got this whole thing under control, and the blessings that we've experienced have been temporal. But the blessings that we anticipate are eternal. Be still before the Lord. And then that next word is really important. Wait. Okay? I don't know anybody who has this as a spiritual gift. I'm sorry, I know all of you, and none of you do I know to have this gift. Okay? I don't have it. Wait. How many of your children like being told to wait? Anybody have a child that loves to just wait? Of course you don't. It's something you struggled with as a child. It's something you struggle with as an adult. And you will until you get what you want. So what is it that you want? What do you want most? That's where the psalmist in 73 said, I have nothing on earth that I want more than God. And when I get to heaven, the thing that I want most is God. Not Asher's chocolate. Though I hope we have dark chocolate in heaven, right? What is it you want most? God. God. Wait. Wait on the Lord. He works, but he doesn't work on your time frame. He works, but he doesn't work according to your rules. He works, and he works more perfectly than your best ideas. Be still before the Lord. Wait patiently. Fret not over the one who prospers in his way, the one who's carrying out evil devices. Verse 5, commit your way, even as the other man prospers in his way. What he reminds us is that this life is a journey. We are en route. We've not arrived. And the utopia that we seek is not to be found right here, right now. He's going to bring us back to this place. The meek will inherit this very world on which we stand. My wife and I were talking. You know what? Maybe God's helping us to keep that elevator working, because when we come back in 7 years, people are going to be worshiping here again. I don't know. But it changes the perspective, doesn't it? We're coming back to this place. We get to inherit this world perfected under Jesus. Wow, that's awesome. But not yet. But not yet. Verse 8 then reminds us, why is this so important? And the reason is the same as we found in Psalm 73. My feet had well nigh slipped. I was almost brought over to the other side. Verse 8. Refrain from anger, forsake wrath, fret not yourself. Three ways of saying the same thing. Because when you do this, you are in danger of evil. Rather than doing good, these things tend only to evil. This is the fast track to not accomplishing God's purpose in your life. This is the fast track to working against God's purpose in your life. If you want to find yourself in a place that's more difficult, keep focusing in this direction on those things that frustrate you because of the wickedness of men. But if you do, you're putting yourself in a very precarious place, because you yourself will become a part of the problem rather than a part of the solution. Look down a little bit further, verse 27. It seems as though this same audience has already begun to slip. And so he says, listen, turn away from evil. Stop. Don't keep going down this path. He's putting up a barricade. I was standing at an intersection the other day trying to get people not to go down the road where we're trying to get a semi out of the ditch. And everybody's pretty much working well, except one Jeep, who I point like this, and she goes, like right around me, bang on the window, stop! You can't go there! Stop! You're going the wrong direction! And that's kind of the urgency that David's writing. He says, listen, don't you understand? Rather than becoming a part of the solution, you've become a part of the problem. Because even in your anxiety, you're right, this isn't the way things should be. But in your effort to right these wrongs, you will get it wronger. Can we make that a word? You can't accomplish God's perfect purpose in the strength of the flesh. Only the Spirit can do that. And I stand as public enemy number one for doing God's work man's way. Okay? I am so bad at doing God's work God's way, waiting for God to do the work. Rather, I think I'm going to do something great for God. And the truth is, God doesn't need me. He needs me to wait so that he can work through me. Okay? Verse 9. Don't do this because evildoers will be cut off. But those who do wait for the Lord will inherit the land. Verse 10. Wait, because in just a little while, the wicked will be no more. And though you look carefully at his place, he will not be there. But the ones who right now are the periphery, the ones right now who are benched and on the sidelines, the meek, the poor, the weak, the ugly, these are the ones who will inherit the land. And when they do inherit the land, because they've delighted in God, they will delight themselves in abundant shalom, in the abundance of God's blessings, in the abundance of God's goodness, not just the absence of troubles, but the absolute fulfillment of everything that nourishes and tends and produces a vitality and liveliness from the very God who is life itself. That's the point of this whole psalm. And it's interesting that this problem that we have is without any immediate solution, even though there's an ultimate resolution. And C. Hassel Bullock, as he's writing on this passage, says, what we're given here is not a question of resolving the problem, but of a question of learning to live with it. Well, that's not a very encouraging message, Pastor. We got a problem. Let's have the 10 solutions real quick so we can take care of this problem. Move on with God's goodness for our life. God's goodness for your life is this. There's no answer to the problem of evil today other than get your eyes off of man and turn your eyes onto God and learn to live with the tension that you find yourself in today. That's the answer. It's not a popular answer, but that is the answer. That's the tension in a nutshell. Now, verses 12 through 20, we see that man in his wickedness, we have a choice. We have a choice either to be that shining light or to pursue that fading glory. But as we're told there, man is going to fade. He's going to become dead, dry grass. But as we move on, we see that the wicked are put on display for us. What is it about the wicked? Verse 12, the wicked plots against the righteous. He gnashes his teeth. I mean, he uses some very picturesque language, right? Can't you just see? Like a pirate, right? This is what he's doing, and his focus is on the weak, the meek, the righteous. But what does the Lord do with his mouth? The wicked is grinding his teeth. God goes, ha, 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 ha. Right? He's laughing. He's laughing because the wicked has no idea. Why is God laughing? Verse 13, because he sees that the day of the wicked is coming. He sees beyond the horizon. He knows what lies on the shores ahead. The wicked draw the sword. They bend their bows. And why do they do this? Verse 14, to bring down the poor and the needy and to slay the one who wants to live right in this world. And so he's concocting plans. He's devising schemes. He's pulling out the weapons. He's pulling out all the stops to cast off God and accomplish his own purposes. Now, verse 15, what does he say? He says, the sword shall enter their own heart. Their sword shall enter their own heart. Their bows will be broken. Verse 17, their arms will be broken. But God holds the arms of the people who are targeted by the evil ones. So anyone who goes against God will find themselves as the subjects of God's action. And that action is a breaking action. It's a destroying action. Look down in verse 15, he's broken. Verse 17, he's broken. In verse 20, he perishes. And at the end of verse 20, he disappears. He's vanished. He's gone. He says, verse 16, so it's better, it is more good, the little that the righteous has, than the very much, the abundance, the overflow of goodness in this life that not just one wicked man has, but the whole group of them, the whole crowd of wicked who are assembling and gathering and amassing all of this world's goods. You just have a little slice of God's goodness. You just have a little corner of God's blessing. You've just got a little taste of his goodness. Relish that, my friend, because that's better than all this world can afford. Because it's yours given by God. It's not yours taken from God. It's your lot. It's your due. It's that which is necessary to get you to where you need to go. It's your daily bread. And it just tastes like daily bread. It's just manna, for crying out loud. And it's the same taste you had yesterday, but it's sufficient until he feasts you in his presence one day. What we find is that the wicked are living in a very precarious place. And that's what Psalm 73 said. Lord, you place their feet on slippery ground. With all these blessings, the blessings become their focus, and they've lost all sight of you. Verse 21. We see a contrast between the wicked who grab, verse 21, the wicked borrows but does not pay back, but the righteous is generous and gives. And for the next several verses, we're going to see that even though the righteous gives away God's blessings, he does so in such a way that he doesn't lose God's blessing. The righteous is generous and gives because those who are blessed by the Lord are blessed more. They inherit the land. In fact, verse 20, he's ever giving, and his children not only receive a blessing, but become a blessing. You want to know how to live well in this world? Learn to let it go. Learn to give it away. Stop grabbing and taking and thinking that you have to defend yourself, that you have to carve out your own little corner of this world and set up your own little kingdom. God's got that taken care of for you. And it's not now. You might lose everything. I was on the phone with somebody recently, and they said, well, do you have a supply of food that doesn't perish for when the economy fails? I said, no. You should think about that. You can get them for $9.99. Whatever. I don't have TV, so I lost the 1-800 number. I'm sorry. I said, what good am I going to do? What if I get a million servings of food that will last 27 years? What am I going to do with it? God told me I have to give it away. Right? I've got 18. Okay, so I've got none, actually. Okay, but God promised that if I ask him to give me this day my daily bread, ask and you shall receive. Knock, it'll be open to you. Seek, you'll find. God's got this taken care of. I can set myself up with all the ammunition. I can set myself up with the biggest bug-out bag. I can set myself up with all the meals ready to eat. But at the end of the day, what am I going to do with it? God says, give it away. Meet the needs of your friends. So maybe I should be. Maybe I should be storing up and stocking up for the end of the world so that I can help somebody else with it. He says, how do you deal with this life? You deal with this life by learning to give away the blessings that God gives you. You know why? Because it's when you give it away that God gives you more. And God gives you more. And God gives you more. And he's writing to the Corinthians. Paul's writing to the Corinthians. He says, listen, understand that you can't outgive God. Because the more you give, the more God gives you to give. So not only do you receive a blessing, but you become a blessing to others. And not only do you taste God's goodness, but others taste God's goodness through you. Wow, that's pretty awesome. And so he says, verse 23, the steps of a good man, or of a man, he's talking about the good man, but the steps of a man are established by the Lord when this man delights in God's way. I'm on a journey. I can live by this world's rules, or I can live by God's rules. I'm walking in one of two paths. That's the only options. When I delight in God's path, when I make God's path my journey, my steps are established. They're set. They don't fall. They don't slip. Verse 21, the law of God is in his hearts. His steps don't slip. I'm on firm ground. And then he speaks as a wise man, as a sage, if you will. Verse 25, I've been young. Now I'm old. Half of us in this room know what that means. Okay, I've been young. Now I'm old, yet over the course of a lifetime, you know what I've not seen? I've never seen God forsake the righteous. I've never seen his children begging bread. When they gave away what they had, I've not seen them lacking. In fact, his children become a blessing, even as he gives things away. So verse 27, turn away from evil, do good, and in this way, you will dwell forever. You want permanence? You want permanence? Then learn to give away that which is temporal. And God will give you permanence. We come down to the last little section, verse 52 or 32. The wicked watches for the righteous. What we find here is there's a promise of God's justice. There's a promise of God's justice. The wicked watches for the righteous. He seeks to put him to death. But the Lord will not abandon the righteous to the power of the wicked. And when God brings judgment down upon the wicked, he'll protect the righteous. So he says again in verse 34, wait for the Lord. Keep your feet in his way, because when you do, he will exalt you to inherit the land. And when you get there, you will look on when the wicked are cut off. You'll look. You'll see. You'll see. I've seen it. You'll see it. And now he throws in another personal illustration. Verse 35. I've seen a wicked, ruthless man spreading himself like a big green native tree. It's planted in soil where it belongs. Because this world is his home. He's not just passing through. This is where his treasures are laid up. I've seen that man. Verse 36, but he passed away. And look! Look! He is no more. In fact, I sought him, and he could not be found. He was grabbing. He was targeting. He was aiming. He was gathering. He was running over people. And you know where he is today? Nobody knows. He's gone. His success looks like nothing. I've seen it. So he says in verse 37, you've been looking at the wicked man. You've been looking at the evil man. You've been looking at the wrongdoers. I want you to change your perspective. Look at God, but also, verse 37, mark and behold. Look at the blameless man. Look at the upright man, because there's a future for that man. The word future has the idea of the hinder part. There is a hinder part for that man. And one author brings out the fact that this is kind of the Hebrew perspective on the future. We kind of have our back to the future. All we can see is the past as we've lived it. But there's something behind us that we can't see, but it's there. And he says, there's a future. When that man turns around, it's going to be worth seeing. He says, so mark that man, behold that man, because behind his back, behind the veil, God has so much in store for those who are willing to walk that path. Verse 38, but transgressors, all of them together, every single last one of them will be destroyed, and the future for the wicked is cut off. It's more terrible than you can imagine. Verse 39, salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. Verse 40, the Lord helps them. The Lord delivers them. The Lord saves them. He, again, piles up words as only a poet can. He says, do you want God to work in your life? And my friend, stop looking at the world that's getting ahead. Stop looking at the world that's tearing down. Stop looking at the chaos. And get your eyes on a God who will establish your feet in His ways. The Lord helps them and delivers them. In fact, He delivers them from the wicked and He saves them. Why? Because they take refuge in Him. So, as we look at the options, we're either going to be an increasingly shining light or have an increasingly fading glory. But in order to know peace today, we must rest in the God who holds tomorrow. We're coming right now to the table, and I ask if you'd turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. What does this look like? It looks like Jesus, right? It looks like Jesus in the middle of God's people, with God's law, with God's Torah, with God's temple, beautified and enlarged by the hands of Herod the Great. Beautiful golden doors that are seen from the Mount of Olives reflecting that rising sun. Huge, amazing, vast. He's brought into the presence of the top dog of the house of God on planet Earth, Annas, Caiaphas. And they're men who are playing by the rules of man. They're men who are playing the game of heaven by the rules of the world. They've gotten ahead. They're wearing their glory. And Jesus stands before them. And He's slapped down. He's cursed out. His hair is ripped from His face by the handfuls and beards. His head is beaten with a crown of thorns. Now look what it says there in 1 Peter chapter 2. We're going to go back to verse 20. What credit is it if when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? But if when you do good and suffer, then you endure. This is a gracious thing in the sight of God, because to this you've been called. Because Christ also suffered for you, leaving an example so that you might follow in His steps. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in His mouth. When He was reviled, He did not revile in return. When He suffered, He didn't take matters into His own hand. He didn't threaten, but He continued entrusting Himself to Him who judges justly. My friend, you wouldn't be saved today if Jesus didn't follow the advice that we're given in Psalm 37. Fret not because of evildoers. Trust in the Lord and do good. Don't get angry and settle it according to your own wrath. Be still and wait for God to work his good, both in you and through you. Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. Let's pray.